thing, because even where discrimination has been fought vigorously, in most instances, the percentage of blacks and Chicanos are still less in the place of employment than in the population.
Okay, I'd just like to touch on one last matter. You mentioned the racial restrictive covenants that existed, and that, from what I've seen, was one of the greater social problems in Los Angeles outside of the job situation during the war. Were you involved in any of these cases? And if so, what could you briefly describe the character of some of the cases that you handled and whether there was union involvement in any of them?
Now, one of the cases that our office handled was a case, I think the man's name was Henry Laws, L-A-W-S. I remember it because of the peculiar coincidence between the name and my work. They were ordered, a junction was gotten against their living in a property that they owned where there was a restrictive covenant.
What year was it?
I would say 45, 46, 47, somewhere in that area. I could be 2-3 years off. And they refused to move and were held in contempt. And we took it to the Supreme Court and sustained their right to live in property which they owned, which doesn't seem like much of a victory, but it was pretty important at that time.
Okay. But would you say that in your involvement in fighting racial restrictive covenants that any of these trade union activists were playing a leading role, or who would you say played a leading role in community organizing?
I don't remember. Again, I'm not too clear on that. I think organizations like the NAACP were very active, and there were some special organizations formed around the fight against restrictive covenants. There was a black lawyer by the name of Lauren Miller, who was, I was designated as the leader in this area and perhaps in the nation on the fight, who argued the, I can't think of the name of the case, but the U.S. Supreme Court case that outlawed the restrictive covenants. He later became a judge. There was substantial participation in the legal fight by whites, but the leadership in the legal fight was by black lawyers, including led, I would say, by Lauren Miller here, and Thurgood Marshall, who's now on the U.S. Supreme Court. They were leading figures in that fight, and that was, at that time, was rather unusual because there were so few black lawyers. There are now a great, great many, but at that time, I don't remember the number, but the number was very small.
Mm-hmm. So then there would have been more of a need of lay people in the community becoming involved.
Oh, yes, and there was great involvement in the black community and very substantial white support, and there were white lawyers in addition to our firm who participated in it, but the leadership was by the black lawyers. About 44, 45. That doesn't mean it didn't exist, but I never ran into a problem with Jim Crow locals after that, and so far, I'm positive there aren't any now,
but they disappeared
for many, many years.
They had disappeared in Los Angeles by 45. And
I'm quite sure that that's so. There weren't that many to begin with.
Right. How do you think the Steele decision would have affected unions who discriminated against blacks by ritual or constitutional statute, such as the IAN?
Well, that and the James versus Marineship case, both of them clearly ruled that that was illegal.
Yeah.
You know, that they had to have equal treatment, and if they're discriminated against, they don't have equal treatment. I think there were a series of cases. There were some other cases, and I can't remember them about the same time, that laid down the same principle.
But those were national landmark cases.
National and state cases of various kinds.
Okay. Thank you.